This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I'm your host, Jason Bishop. Still got this damn cold.
It's not going away.
Well, you know, for all those people who think a week has passed, we did this the same day as last week's episode, so nothing's really changed.
Don't tell them all the magic.
I will this time around. I'm phlegmy. I'm gross.
Yeah, we don't want anybody to think that Jay's dying or something like that, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, no, they're going to think I'm like 3 months into this cold, and I'm like, well, no, I'm just pre-recording some episodes.
So we have vacations coming up, and
yeah.
We want to make sure that we still are able to give you guys content every single week.
Or recording the episodes in case Jason dies.
What?
No, sorry. It just went dark there for a second.
My fault. And there's a flaw in that logic. Jason's the one who does all the hard work.
It's
so
true.
They still wouldn't go up if he were to leave us.
Yeah, exactly. So I'd have all these episodes that nobody could hear. So
no.
That's okay, Jay. I'm your best friend. I will promise you that I will come and clean your browser history.
Yes.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, and after you clean his browser history, I will help you edit.
Yes. Well,
I don't want anything to do with the browser history.
No, I will take care of the browser history.
Love, Jay, I love you to death, but don't want to see your browser history.
It's okay. I've already got to set it to clean.
Cool, nice. Just the same thing is I never want either of you to
really,
see my browser history.
Really, it's like YouTube and a lot of weird IMDb referencing.
Yeah. See, I think the danger with some of our browser history is when we're trying to cast and we're looking at actors under 20.
Yeah, casting teenagers.
It can get dubious.
That might get a little
or
dubious.
Casting preteens, that's where it gets really... Could get really creepy. Yeah.
Like legitimate.
I'm not stalking. I swear to God.
We're not perverts. We're just trying to do a podcast.
We don't watch a lot of movies with children. Jesus.
Yeah, because we're normal, nice people.
And problem with child actors, they only stay child actors for about 5 or 6 years.
True.
If you're lucky, right? And usually they only do like one movie or like Disney Channel stuff. It's like, well, we don't watch Disney Channel stuff.
No. Yeah, unless you're Dakota Fanning that just stayed the same height through her entire career.
Yeah, like she grew to be like 5 feet tall and just stayed there.
Yeah. No, can still play 13.
Yeah. Which is creepy in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. Trish Coughlin, everybody.
Yeah. Hey, everybody.
And if you didn't catch that other guy, that's Sam Stepanenko.
That's me.
That's right. And today we're going to get weird.
Yeah.
We're going to get weird. We're talking about a 1958 movie called The Trollenberg Terror, at least in the UK it was. In the United States, it is also known by The Crawling Eye, if that sounds familiar. It was in the pilot episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yep.
Yes, it was. I didn't know that
until after we did the movie, but...
Which is also available on YouTube.
I almost ended up watching that because I had so much trouble finding a working copy on YouTube that wasn't glitchy. But I got to watch a really cool version for the first two-thirds anyhow.
Yeah, there's plenty of versions out there. Yeah. And I had fun watching this movie for sure.
Oh, me too. It is bonkers. There's a delight to like some of this kind of low budget but like crazy creature features that I just enjoy. It's so much fun.
Yeah. I saw some YouTube thing, you know, one of those YouTube sites that likes to make lists, right, and of the weirder, more underappreciated sci-fi films, and I saw this thing, and it's like, okay, there's this mist, and there's this thing that lives in the mist, and it looks like a giant eyeball, and it can control people's minds. I'm like, okay, you're overselling.
And it's got tentacles, and like it looks like a throbbing, heaving brain. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm sold, okay? I'm sold. You just stop overselling. I got it. I'm in.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, I was like, okay, 1958, but I liked it.
Well, you know, I keep throwing these weird movies at you.
And I still like them. Because
this all started with the Monolith Monsters.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, which I really enjoyed. Go back, listen to it. Really enjoyed that movie. But like I said, this one, not as much as Monolith Monsters. But good thing we referenced that one, because there's a geologist in this one, too.
Yes there is a geologist.
They really like their geologists in 1950s movies.
And keeping our small mountain town theme going from last week.
Yep. Yes.
That's this week as well, so lots of holdovers. Now, the mist, that kind of fog, that inspired John Carpenter's Fog, that thing that lives in the fog.
Ah.
So, and believe it or not, even though you may have not heard of the movie, it has kind of influenced popular culture. Of course, Mystery Science Theater covered it.
Yep.
And the Misfits covered it as a song and did their own kind of tribute to that movie.
They did, yeah. They actually have something called the Fiend Club, and they actually have like your public access horror movie thing, like the Elvira Show, where they do classic horror movies, and they sort of sit and they do commentary. And
right.
The... So that's what I watched. I watched most of the movie on their Fiend Club until the version that he posted got all glitchy and kept freezing, unfortunately. They also interviewed the gentleman who played the creature from the Black Lagoon part of their interstitial, which was really a lot of fun to watch.
That's cool.
Did you know that he's 6'5"?
I can believe it.
I'm like, but yeah, 6'5". They apparently that's how he got cast. It's like they looked at him and went, yeah, you'll do.
Yeah. We need a big creature.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, that was kind of fun to watch it. They're not very good hosts, to be honest with them. They've got their Misfits voices on and all that stuff. And then when they're interviewing the actor who played the creature from the Black Lagoon, they change into their normal everyday voices, and it was totally, totally hilarious.
Nice. Because
right? They went from like Misfit voice to interviewer voice.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It was very, very funny to watch.
Cool.
Yeah, it was cool.
Oh, I just watched the movie like a schlep.
I did a little bit of research, but...
But yeah, it was kind of fun to watch it like you would have on one of those local horror movie shows. It was kind of fun to watch.
I think I watched the American one, which is a little bit shorter than the UK one, but...
Yeah, because you were saying that... Because, yeah, there's a couple things that come out of nowhere, which... We're pretty sure in 10 minutes that aren't in the movie we saw.
And then again, it's the 50s. Sometimes they just bring things up that never go anywhere.
True.
That is also entirely possible.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah, they probably had an intent for it, and then it got cut. And they're like, well, really, that scene in because we need that extra 10 minutes.
Yeah. And I love how they set the tone for this movie with the opening of the mountain climbers in the most inappropriate mountain climbing gear.
Oh, yeah.
I think I've ever seen.
even for the 50s. Now, yeah. Do you think this movie was set in the 50s, or was it set a little bit earlier, like in the 40s? It's kind of tricky because science seems kind of 50s, setting seems kind of
40s. Yeah, even, you know what? The technology, even in the film, seems old for the 1958, because they're using those phones with the are just like hockey pucks on wires.
Yeah.
And they crank, and I'm like, Jesus, that's old even for 58.
And you crank, because what you could do is you crank for the operator and be like, please, can I speak to you? Blah, blah, blah. And it's like a lady with like little cables that she's plugging in.
And it might just be because it's a remote.
Switzerland. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I think those cable things, is that thing just really only hooks up to that hut on the mountain and the observatory.
Yeah.
It's definitely post World War II because Alan is from the UN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a United Nations troubleshooter.
Yeah.
Alan, being the main character, Alan Brooks, is portrayed by Forrest Tucker alongside Lawrence Payne, who actually returns from I haven't even said the name of the movie yet. The Trollenberg Terror is what we're doing. 1958, also known as The Crawling Eye. Yes, I did. That's the cold talking, telling you. Mm-hmm. Directed by Quentin Lawrence. And Lawrence Payne, who plays Philip Truscott, returns from the TV series. Or TV serial, I should say, is probably more accurate.
Yeah, there was like 6 episodes of it you can't get anywhere.
Yeah, the original story is by Peter Key, and the screenplay was done by Jimmy Sangster, who some of you might know from Dracula and Curse of Frankenstein, the Hammer movie stuff. So
I'd heard his name before.
Yeah, and that kind of plays into some of the quality of the film, how it takes so long to develop and see these creatures. That's a bit of a Hammer thing as well.
It's kind of gothic-y in some of that mentality.
Yeah. Jennifer Jane plays Sarah Pilgrim, Janet Monroe and Pilgrim, and Warren Mitchell as Professor Krevitz. That's the main players in the film. There's actually another guy. The guy who plays Drew Hurst also returns for the TV series, Stuart Sanders.
Nice.
Or Saunders, I should say. And this movie is also the last film from South Hall Studios in the UK.
Really?
Yes.
Did not know that.
So, must have done gangbusters.
Yeah. Well, it was double billed with another creature feature for most
in the UK. Run. Yeah. In the United States, I should say. It was double billed, yeah.
Yeah.
And that distribution company, it was one of the last movies distributed by that company in the US as well. Wow. So, it's an international killer, the Trolenberg Terror.
Well, maybe that's the thing. Like, these creatures are real and they're undermining this movie.
Yeah, it is entirely possible.
Well, and we talked about this when we talked about the Monolith Monsters, that 1958-59 was kind of the end of this era.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
So that kind of all ties together, that this would be sort of at the swan song for a lot of these types of movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those wonky creature features are like, I have an idea. There's this fog and there are these evil eyes in it.
Yeah, and
it's a
radioactive fog.
Radioactive fog for sure.
Is it radioactive?
It's radioactive because it registers.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And
with the scanners.
Yeah. And it also, when you're, it has this extreme cold thing.
It's super cold. Hyper cold. Yeah.
Hyper cold. Cause not enough layers to what this thing can do.
No.
No, but you know what? That works. It worked.
Well, you know, the first thing, even without just the basics, knowing the basics, I'm like, okay, the cloud makes sense because whatever this creature is carrying around its own atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could actually, even now, I'm like, okay, it sounds ludicrous, but it does kind of make sense.
Yes.
See, and I looked at it also
for its territory,
camouflage as well, because it's an alien and it wants to invade. It's not going to announce itself.
The cloud that doesn't move but then moves, it looks ridiculous in this movie, but... You know, I can still see that potential, especially now with modern effects and how to be able to do that properly. I'm like, oh man, this could make for a pretty fun, moody, but you could still have a lighthearted monster movie.
Oh, I want it to be like sort of rompy, but I don't want it. I cannot have it too serious.
Into my director.
Yeah, no, I kind of want campy fun, but still in that have some more horrific splatter gore moments.
Oh yeah.
I mean, after all, the opening moment in this is one of the guys who we never see. He's off camera. Below are the two guys yelling up to him who's in the fog. And he's like, oh, I see something up here. I see someone. And next thing you know, there's a scream that cuts off real fast. And then he falls over the edge. And of course, their line is connected. So they're trying to pull him back up. And the dude's head's missing.
Yep.
But they don't show that.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, there is a later scene, though, where they do pull a guy out and he has no head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then we actually, for 58, I was kind of surprised. And then there's the head in the bag.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, they went graphic with this.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why. That was the thing. It's the swan songs that are like, we might as well be shocking because
I mean, we're trying to get people to watch this. In 1958.
And the creatures would have been, too. They were really well done, actually. Like they don't stand up. But
no. But I don't know if they stood up in 58. But
no.
there were elements that worked really well. The first time you see one of them through the doorway worked really, really well.
Yeah.
You don't see the whole thing. You just get the effect of that eye and that viscous.
And you get an idea of how large these things actually are.
Yep. A lot bigger than your average dude.
Yeah. I mean, this movie happens and like everything's very convenient in this film.
Yes, I know.
I mean, you got Alan who's on a train heading to Trolenberg just for vacation, really. He's just on holiday.
Really? No,
he's going to go see his friend. But no, he says he was just on holiday to see
his
friend.
That's what he says, but when he's talking to the professor, more gets revealed.
Yeah. And he's on the train with the pilgrims who are a traveling psychic act.
Yeah, which I loved.
Yeah, that's never going to play again. Of course it does. That's why they stop in Trolenberg in the first place, is the psychic one of the two gets an impression and needs to stop there. They were actually on their way to Geneva. So they were on their way to Geneva, so she stops. they want to get off the train there. So
she's very insistent that she has to get off the train.
Yeah, very insistent.
And I mean, she's had this vision and she's fainted dead away. So it's not a small impression. But then the train announcer says, oh, next stop, Trollenburg. She's like, we have to get off. This is what I saw. And that's where it starts.
Yeah. And so they realize that there's something about this place already. We already get this impression that she's somewhat psychic. So.
Yeah, that's sort of how they introduce it. I kind of like that, where they just kind of go with it at the beginning, and then later on the sister's like, oh yeah, that's just what we do. Mm-hmm. We're just on vacation.
Well, I love that the reporter, like when he meets them, recognizes them. He's like, I know you. I've seen you somewhere before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But he doesn't sort of figure it out until further into the movie, which is nice, right? It's like they are semi-famous psychic act, right?
Yeah. Yeah, like you might have somebody where you've seen them on a TV show, and you're like, you look familiar. And you can't really recall right away. That happens all the time.
Sure.
It happens in the movie we watched last week. We were watching the movie. I'm like, oh, I know that actor. He's in something else that I really like. But it took me a long time to place it.
Yeah. Mm.
And that happens all the time until you can start making those associations. So.
Exactly.
So they all wind up at this inn at the base of the Trollenberg Mountain.
The Europa.
Yeah. And up... halfway up that mountain is an observatory. Oh, I hate this observatory so much. And they are doing cosmic ray research on a mountain.
That's part of the cover. Because, I mean, it plays out later that they've seen an experience with these clouds before.
Over in the Andes.
Yeah. On a completely different continent.
Yeah, and keeping it very secret.
Yeah, see, I think it seems silly, but I think it'd be nice to have like an observatory type of thing. But I would have thought it would be a place people would stop. Like it would be an observatory that.
Hey, look at the bunker up on the hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah,
and like, it's built like a bunker. They only have one window. He's really proud of his one window.
Yeah, that one was like.
And how much money they spent building this installation.
How much different are we nowadays? It's like, that dude, that's one window.
Yeah. It has a shutter.
Well, a big metal shutter, because apparently that's what they needed in case any avalanches came.
Yeah, it is a big, solid concrete building. Yeah. That's why you don't have a lot of shattering windows.
They'll be buried alive, but they'll be alive.
They'll run out of air.
Yeah. I think it was important for the finale of the film that they had this super fortified bunker.
Yeah, but it
was very heavy-handed.
To be honest, it didn't make a lot of sense to me that they would go up to take the whole village up to the bunker closer to these poisonous clouds and where people have been disappearing. That made no sense to me at all. I'm like, wouldn't you just leave?
Well, they explained that.
They said because the cloud has already surrounded the village. If they go through the cloud, they're going
to
die.
They went to the most secure spot they could think of.
Yeah, like, right? I mean, this is like a fog. So if they're in the places, then the doors will leak, right?
Oh, also forgot to... on the overselling in this movie, forgot the zombies.
Oh, yes, the zombies.
I forgot the zombies. Yeah. How could I forget the mind-controlled zombies?
I know. They don't look like zombies. That's probably why.
That's true. But in every essence of the word, they're zombies.
And they're so much fun to watch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I do like that, you know, they're still kind of acting like a person, but they're being puppeted, and they're uncoordinated.
Oh, it was so genius. They won't bleed.
I'm like, there are some really great ideas in this movie.
Yes.
I loved it. Like, the lack of coordination was really well done by, like, that one actor.
Yeah.
I was really suitably impressed.
Yeah. No, I thought it was pretty cool. And hopefully you guys will find it cool, too. I'm going to run the trailer, and we're going to talk more about the Trollenburg Terror, a.k.a. the Crawling Eye.
This alarm fills the night with terror, for high on a mountainside, a mysterious fear such as no human being has ever seen before.
Where there are mountains, there are always clouds.
But this one remains static. On the side of the Trollenberg, it never moves.
Freak of nature.
A radioactive freak of nature?
It strikes without warning, wreaking death and destruction too horrible to behold. A force of evil that tortures its victims and hurls them mercilessly to the brink of murder and madness. What is it? And what does it crave, this creeping horror that hungers and thrives on human flesh while it inhabits its own silent world that no man can penetrate? No one is safe from its spell of destruction. A cold, hypnotic stare striking fear into the hearts of all. creating a frenzied nightmare for those who behold it.
The cloud is splitting up.
Splitting up.
There are four of them now, and all moving this way.
Boom, that was it. Goddamn, I love old trailers like that.
There's so much more fun than the trailers we get nowadays.
Yeah, they're really pitching and selling it where they almost give away the movies these days.
True. Like, it's a Carnival Barker type of thing. Come in and see the most amazing thing, but they won't tell you what it is.
Yeah.
It's quite cool.
Yeah, no, I totally like that. Now, while this was running, you mentioned how much you liked the opening credits of this film.
I love the opening credits.
And they are very unique, especially for the time period where you just have a few cards, right?
Yeah.
Given your opening credits, but these were very different for the time period.
Very dynamic.
Yeah.
I think it's because of the time frame. Like, this is 58, and I think this would be like the experimental before the 60s credits, because that's sort of what I got, like a 60s mod movie. That's what those credits reminded me of.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah, no, that's what you hit nail on the head, I think, is it had that very early 60s mod look.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know who did this credit. Maybe he had a great career in the 60s. I'm thinking that might be what happened.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, but they were fun, and I'm like, okay, this
already
is really
up to
early.
Be a good movie.
Yeah, just the opening credits, I'm like, all right. After that, it takes a while. There's a lot of dialogue. We don't see the creatures for a very long time.
I don't think we see the creatures till the last 20 minutes.
Yeah, the last 10, 15 minutes, yeah.
Yeah. In fact, that's why the movie was shortened for the American version, so we can get to the creatures faster.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That explains a lot. Because I thought that was quite interesting, because I kept thinking Jaws. Never show the creature right away.
Well, I mean, we're seeing basically what the creature can do. We're learning about it. We learn that cloud is the atmosphere. We learn the cold aspect and the mind control. All this happens slowly throughout the film. And it's not a long film. I mean, this thing clocks in under an hour and a half.
I think it's because you're discovering it as the characters are discovering it. They're not going to feed it to you. Like some movies now, you find out stuff before the main characters, which to me, I'm not that on board with because it sort of ruins it for you. You're already ahead.
If you're with the characters, you feel like you're riding next to them. And there are, you know, there's quite a few characters in this film as we go along. More and more people kind of join this troop of people.
Yep.
The first person they meet is Philip Truscott. Mm-hmm. And I had a tough time attaching to this character and figuring out what was up with him. Because we don't really learn he's a journalist till later on in the film. When he meets Alan and he's the one, he's like, oh, I know these girls. You know, I know the pilgrims from somewhere. I don't know where. And then he makes a phone call about Alan because he's like doing some background check. Well, who does that at a hotel about somebody else staying in a hotel? Do you do a background check on the guy in the room next to you? Like, who does that? And they don't really follow it up for a very long time. And in fact, they don't. Yeah. You don't really find out why he did it at all.
No. Well, it's weird.
Yeah, you do. I mean, he's there to investigate the observatory because they suspect that it's you in front.
Yes.
Right. And that's all sort of ties together at some point. Like, there's a bit, like a very brief bit of dialogue.
Yeah. And I think some of that stuff got cut in the American version that we saw.
And I think it was weird though, because there is a whole different thing with his character. Like you say, you don't know what to make of him. And then this thing happens. So it seems like they're selling him at the beginning as like this smarmy character that's going to screw over our main character.
I actually thought he was going to be a villain. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seems like he should be a villain. And then he isn't.
And in more ways than one, because he turns out to be quite heroic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He falls in love with Sarah.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
That's obviously stuff that had gotten cut.
All these little things that happen very conveniently or an offline really influenced on what I wanted to do and how to change this movie as our remake. It's all these little things that I'm like, oh, okay, that's what I want. Because that will help drive these characters to their places.
Well, I think when I saw him go off with Sarah, I'm like going, oh, okay, that age gap isn't so bad. Because what I was thinking partway through is I thought there was going to be an Alan Ann thing. And I'm like, ooh, that's gross. I'm wondering if somebody on set was like, guys, that's gross. And so they didn't do it.
And then they shoehorned into a new relationship.
Yeah, they're like, no, this guy's a better one. Let's do this.
I mean,
I know that probably isn't what happened, but in my head, I played that whole movie like that.
Yeah. And Anne's seems to starts out as seeming to be like a key figure in the whole movie, when really she really doesn't play all that much.
No, she's in bed most of the time, murmuring about the mountain.
Yeah, or shrieking and fainting.
Yeah. Although when they're in the observatory, when the entire village is up there, and then she walks into the office where she knows the zombie that's trying to kill her is in there.
Oh no, he's behind. She goes there knowing he's over there, but nobody sees him go into the office behind her.
Okay. Well, I thought he was already in the office.
No, when she's trying to hide from him.
Oh, okay.
And she doesn't
misinterpreted it.
Yeah. And okay, Anne, learn to lock a door. Sorry, sweetie. It's really your own fault at that point.
No kidding.
But
she's the only one that knows the zombies are zombies.
Yeah, there's a one point where the main characters are talking about hypnotizing her to use her connection for the monsters, and then nothing happens.
That would have been kind of neat, actually.
Yeah.
To do a reverse connection.
Yeah. In my remake, I would make more of that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Missed opportunity.
Yeah, because she's obviously connecting to these creatures up on the mountain. And what's happening is, I mean, the creatures just, this is the where they want to live and be left alone. And they kill anybody who comes up into their habitat initially. But it's that psychic connection
that brings them down.
That brings them down because they feel that's a threat to their existence up there. They want it to be secret. They want, I guess, they live up there with the Sasquatches.
Yeah,
and
abominable snowmen. I think.
And when their first attempt on her fails, that's when they start coming down the mountain.
Yeah. Well, I mean, initially, there's another crew that goes up. That's Brett and Drewhurst. They go up to kind of investigate those other missing mountain climbers. They're geologists, too, so they're going up to do some geology work.
Oh, no, the one guy's a geologist. The other guy's going to help him get up there.
Okay, so that's what they're going up
there
for.
He's like a super skilled mountain climber, which is important.
Yeah, so while they're staying up in the cabin, the mind control draws Brett out, and they use him to try to kill Anne a little bit later on in the film.
But don't they, prior to that, these creatures try different ways to do it. Because one point they have Anne, they implant this urge, this need, this very desperate need. You have to go up the mountain. You have to go up the mountain.
They try to bring her
to them.
Yeah.
And Brett, I think, they'd taken him already. I think he was backup, but it does end up coming back.
Yeah, because she does, she makes it up to the observatory before and was going to go further, but the other crew that Alan had put together arrives just as time as she was about to leave, so they take her back down the mountain.
Ooh, or maybe Brett was waiting for her. Maybe that was part of the whole thing, because she was going to go up higher. Brett was already taken. Maybe that was her plan.
He was already up there.
Yeah, maybe that was the plan. Is like he was always supposed to kill her up there, and the thing was they're like, well, we can't get to her up here. It'll send you back.
Yeah, no, there's these logical attempts. They don't want to get their hands dirty, their tentacles dirty.
Yeah. I don't know what you call them.
Tentacles.
Tentacles.
They're reacher grabbers.
That could have got dirty later.
Mm-hmm. Now you're going into
it's a very different movie in the Japanese culture.
I think so. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'd be touching Anne a different way.
Yeah.
Speaking of deleting Jay's browser history.
Again, which is why it's your job. And also why I want neither of you to see my history. this stuff they do see her as a threat. But I think what we also need to address is why they consider her such a threat. Because they never really get into that.
I think really just
she's aware of them.
She's aware. Yeah. Psychically aware. Like, there are people that are curious about this cloud that doesn't move.
And I think mysterious deaths on the mountain. Yeah. People disappear. People
I mean, for me, I'd wipe out the scientist and the observatory. I think that's just all silly, hackneyed stuff that stays in the 50s. I do like the fact that this might be a destination mountain, though. You know, if it's attracting mountain climbers, it's a challenging mountain to climb. So it's a destination spot. You have a nice inn there.
Are you going to make the mayor the Jaws mayor? Where he's like, we can't tell anybody that people are dying on the mountain.
Yes.
This is our peak season.
Yeah, actually, yes. Greed is a very easy to associate factor.
That's absolutely what I thought when you mentioned that. I'm like, well, he's got to be Jaws mayor.
Why not? Jaws mayor.
Yeah. I don't think I'd eliminate the professor, but I would change the
dynamic. I know. I would change who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I cast him.
As a scientist or of some sort, but without the huge observatory.
Yeah.
You know what? You could remain having, like, you can combine two characters and have the professor actually be a geologist who's at the mountain because, well, the geologist, you're kind of curious about the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. I would just, yeah, that's exactly what I would just make him the geologist instead of having a separate crew of geologists.
Yeah.
I would have Alan just being on vacation and not know the scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I do like the fact that he's just a guy who was going there and met these people on a train.
He's a climber.
Yeah. Right? Now, it's the Pilgrims, mainly because I like their name. I want them to be the central point of our remake.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
There's a line in there when they're doing the act for the people at the hotel. I think it was actually Philip who asks, I assume you did. Oh, no, I think it was actually the professor. Yeah. I assume you guys used to do this with signals. And she said, well, we used to.
Yep.
And she started actually being able to do this without the signals. So in my mind, I'm thinking, they're con artists.
Yeah.
They're fleecers. And they travel around because they've burnt a territory. And going back a little bit to Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, so that's why they're traveling around from territory to territory.
Ah, see, I still want the Anne connection. I just was going the Whoopi Goldberg route where she actually does have abilities, but she's not aware of them.
No, I would totally do that too, and we can see those develop as she hits this town.
Yeah.
And we can ride along that with her. It gives her a little bit more to do, and then you can have these characters being a little slick as well, because they're originally here to fleece these people.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where Philip comes in, as you can still have him as an investigative journalist.
Yeah.
So, who does know them because he's been following their trail of con and such great English sound. Of conning and ripping people off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like having like just that journalist character there, because it's just,
it would give him more, more motivation to be there.
Yeah. And an inquisitive nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you know what? You could tie it in. The professor, maybe he's not necessarily a geologist, but he's still investigating the clouds, right?
Yeah.
Because he's seen the phenomenon in the Andes. Keep that tie in.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So he's investigating it from just the clouds, but as an atmospheric phenomenon rather than
that maybe ties to a mountain in a certain geological formation. Yeah. Who knows?
You can modernize it too, where like he's a geologist, but like he's looking at it from an environmental perspective.
Yeah.
Why is this occurring? It shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen. And
that's where you have, you know, you can have an environmental impact allegory as well that would ring true today.
Yeah, for sure.
And of course, I'd totally modernize it because I don't think the time period makes a difference for this film. So,
no, originally when I was thinking about it, I was thinking I'd keep it back in the 50s just because of the isolation of the village, right? But if you modernize it, it could still work.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I like an idea of a busier resort, so you can off a few more kids.
See, and you know what? I would put it only for the only reason, so that the con artists can be as surreptitious as possible, because like with images and everything being shared all over the world nowadays, it might be hard to modernize it. But if you put it like in the 80s,
or somewhere,
it would probably still
area.
Work there.
But I mean, that would be what maybe attracts the pilgrims to this area too, if it is a hot ski resort or something, or a tourist area.
Oh, have some wealthy people there.
Yeah.
So you're trying to get in at the Europa as a nightclub act.
Yeah.
The Europa sounds like a grand hotel.
It does.
Yeah.
So that's where the wealthy people would be.
Yeah.
So there's the reason they're there. And you can have drama between these characters, and you can build that interest of Truscott.
Yeah.
To Anne.
Nice.
Yeah. Meanwhile, and I guess you could still have Alan as a vacationing cop of some sort. Somewhat heroic. I would probably have him die during the movie, though.
I would still have him I would still have him somebody who works for like a nondescript international agency, but it's just not factoring in right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, he's kind of your, who you would think is your upfront hero character, and I want him kind of die heroically.
Oh, yeah.
But I want the older of the two pilgrims to be kind of end up the more heroic last girl. I want both of them to survive, but the more heroic and to have a bit of a change in her. So they're doing some shady stuff, and they come out better people out of this.
Because they're, and It's funny because even in the original, she kind of seems like she's the one who's in control, the stronger one. But she's also really in Anne's shadow all the time.
Yeah.
Right? And you really want to play up on the fact that even though she's kind of the one who's sort of the face, she's really in Anne's shadow because Anne makes all the decisions.
Anne's the act and Susan's the pitch girl.
Isn't it Sarah?
Sarah, sorry.
Yeah. But for me, too, it sort of seemed in the original, they didn't give her much. Like, she just seemed to be just this thing that was hanging around. Yeah. Like, I flesh out that character a lot.
I think that a lot of the stuff with the sisters is what ended up in the cutting floor.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because their story could be very interesting and should be very interesting, but you can tell by the end of the movie that it kind of didn't play into their story anymore, so they had to chop a lot of it out.
Yeah. Right? Like, I think the sisters were the key to the climax of the movie, and it just got taken away.
Yeah, they just... They kind of
they become pointless partway through. They should have died then, I guess. If you're going to do it that way, kill them both.
Yeah. Anne was, her only existence was to be rescued all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And to almost die.
Sarah just wasn't needed anymore.
No.
At all. Like, they actually could have offed a lot more characters in this film, but they only offed background characters. They never actually...
Which is very typical of 1950s horror movies, is they never killed off key characters.
Yeah. Right? I mean, if you're going to have if you're going to have a zombie character kicking around, you know, have them actually kill a few people before they get them. Okay, that what bothered me, I'm like, I still like the non-coordination thing doesn't bleed. But if he doesn't bleed, that means his organs aren't working anyway, so what would a gunshot do? The only organ would be working with is probably his brain, and that's being controlled. So he's
remote
control.
You'd have to take the brain out.
You'd have to go to the traditional headshot motif.
Yeah.
See, the problem I also had with it, too, is
they were knocking him out, and I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah, that was the other thing, too. They gave him a
shot. I guess that would break the connection.
They gave him a shot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he doesn't bleed, so what exactly is this shot for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not going to...
It's not flowing anywhere.
Yeah.
No. You're not doing anything by doing this, guys.
Yeah.
No, but I could see knocking them out would break the connection, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? So that would work.
Rattle the synapses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I could see, like, they just simply have him restrained, because that's all they need to do. They just have to keep him out of the way. Like, I would like to see it where it's this danger. He's restrained, but that's all they can do right now, because he's not alive.
Because Brett was responsible for three deaths, right? There was the two mountain climbers and the innkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah, and almost Anne a couple of times.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah, and then who was it? There was another guy,
Hans.
Yeah, Hans was the one that drove off into the mist, trying to get out of town.
Which is how he became.
He's the only one that did the natural thing and tried to leave.
Yeah, but that's why they didn't want to do it.
Then it got really cold, so I turned back.
Yeah, great line.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you have the tiny child that goes back for their ball.
Yeah, I mean, okay,
kill the child.
That's what I would do. I mean, I would have you'd find. Like completely frozen bodies that would chatter, like because this is freezing mechanical mechanisms that are meant to be in the cold. So I mean, this is obviously super cold.
Well, that was the one thing they kind of did at one point in the film after they've taken out that one guy. They're like, "Hold up the light here. It looks like all like the water and cells have been crystallized. Like he's been flash frozen."
Yeah,
and that part needs to be in there.
Yeah, and I think that makes for a great visual as well. The gondola scene when it's starting to freeze in the gondola room, you know, that's where I'd actually have, because you've got two gondolas.
Yeah.
You put all your main characters in the one that gets up, and then you put some of the secondary ones in the other one. You have it break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kill off half your people right there. Because you want something to happen there.
Yeah.
And it doesn't.
I was expecting something to happen
there. And it just kind of creaks, stops, goes again, stops. And you need some tension there.
Yeah.
And are they going to make it? Are they going to make it? And it's just at the end. They're going to try to get out and have it drop out. Oh, my God.
Yeah, like your main characters are trying to save them. And this is all happening.
So, a really good tense moment that we could do in a modern film now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that gondola cart was only like two cars, one up, one down. Right?
Yeah.
In modern day, you'd have something like the ones we have up in Banff where you have... series of cars, right?
Yeah, especially if it's a ski resort too. Yeah. You could have the other gondola as well, like the two men ones.
Yeah, and then that adds to like the tension where like they are up there. There's no way down. now.
Yeah.
They're trapped. Like,
I don't think our movies is going to be as fun as we thought it was going to be.
No,
it's now starting to sound like a horror movie.
It's true. But the characters are trapped
now. We can do both.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. We'll do something like Grabbers, where it's funny, but yeah. There's some darkness.
This scene isn't funny. No. But yeah, you want I just even thinking about that scene, I'm like, I'm excited about that scene.
Yeah, and you've put more tension in it to it, like the everything is now more heightened.
Yeah, and that's all these scenes. They need more of that. Like, I think they're on paper, they're pretty good. They just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Mm. So now we don't have the observatory, though. How do we explain why they're going up the gondola?
See, I'm talking about like observatory, like, you know, in the touristy places where you have like that. You take the gondola up to go look. It's a tourist spot.
Well, you've got the hotel at the base, and maybe you've got the ski club up halfway up, right?
Yeah. Again, yeah. No, I see where you're going, but like I said, the whole point, the whole thing about the observatory, the reason they went there was because it is.
If it's not a ski resort, I mean, maybe it's a climber's destination.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a climber's mountain.
Like, I think there should be something like touristy at the top.
Well, okay, wait a minute.
Caverns.
Ooh.
That they seal in the winter, right? So they had the big steel doors.
Okay.
To give them that security.
Yeah. You could still have a small outpost there because assuming the snow melts in the off season and it's a fire watch station.
Yeah. You have the fire watch station. You also have like the mountain rescue
station.
But none of those would motivate them for the security. Like, what would give them a reason to go up the mountain?
No,
right.
That's true. The motivation to get people up there to begin with.
That's what.
But I mean,
and that's what I'm thinking. Maybe a series of caverns up there that they can close off with steel doors or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So that would give them that
old mines or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So, and which would make a complete sense in this town. That's an old mining town that's now turned into a tourist town.
Yeah.
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 Right. So they've got the security of being.
Oh,
in
then
the
you
mountain.
Can have multiple zombies running through these mines.
It could get really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, so I wanted to address that because we're talking about this really great gondola scene, but no motivation for them to be in them.
Yeah,
true.
And then you can have like the Bloody Valentine type of thing where you're going through the tunnels trying to hide. There's a lot there because it's in a mountain.
Mm, that'd be all right. Little Indiana Jones mine car scene.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of fun stuff with that.
Right? Yeah. Right. They wind up on the other side and like come out and like, okay, we should be safe here. Oh fuck, look at these giant eyeballs.
Yeah. Or no, they're like going, oh no, it's the fog. They're like going, damn it.
Although they don't want to be if the fog instantly freezes things.
But you know what, you could have a lot of fun with mines too, right? Because in the original movie we had like the Air Force come in and firebomb them, right? But what if they break in and our scientist guy says, well, if fire helps them, why don't we find a methane pocket?
Right.
And lure them in. And then they save themselves, which makes it a lot more heroic for everybody, right?
Yeah.
Instead of being rescued by the army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. And like,
I didn't really like the bombing run.
Because he's a geologist for safety. He's got like this gas monitor to go off in case they get near something, but they'll use it to find where they need to be.
Yeah. And you know what? Maybe he's been exploring them as sort of this geologist, environmentalist. He's already been exploring the mines and knows that there are, like, you have to have a reason to say, well, I know.
Well, that's why the mines were closed in the first place.
Yeah.
Or he used to work for the company that used to run the mines.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, definitely. He knows that there's gas pockets in there and knows where some of them usually are, but he has his detector and to verify. He's like, we haven't got one right here. Let's bring them in.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's what's why this village is so small now is the mining dried up. Everybody left, so now it's the only thing attracting anybody to this village now is the touristy
part.
Alpine
sports, the mountain climbing and the skiing. And,
And that's all they have. Yeah. And so that's why they cannot afford
for
people to stop
spot.
Coming.
Yeah.
They literally, this would kill everything in town if they stopped.
I mean, do you make that connection? They do try to say they're aliens. I don't think you need to say it. Just, it is what it is.
Yeah.
They're there and who cares why they're there?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, you just know that it's something that they have to fight against.
Yeah. I mean, once you say they're aliens, well, how did they get there in the first place?
Yeah. Without being seen or something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? They could have been something in the mountain, but we don't know.
Yeah. And again, maybe it's mysterious deaths in the mines, and maybe that's where they came out from the first place.
Something
they
ancient.
Were living in the mountain.
Yeah, something ancient in the mining let them loose.
Yeah,
they all look like Cthulhu monsters to me. So
yeah, true. Yeah, and I mean, I still love to have that the connection that they've seen this before.
Yeah,
I mean, it doesn't have to be like this whole conspiracy, but there's at least one person who's seen it before. Maybe it's the journalist, our journalist character.
I read about this.
I'd read the science journals about this, written by the same professor who's now investigating this one.
Yeah.
Right.
Trying to find a connection.
Yeah. So, I think that the fact that it's not a one-off occurrence,
right,
makes it a little more interesting, right?
Yeah.
And it sets itself up for sequels.
Potentially you could bring in the military because of that, because you can have a cover-up aspect as well.
Yeah.
But that's for your sequel.
Yeah. And I certainly like the controlled zombie thing, because that adds a level of paranoia as well.
It's very The Thing.
Yeah.
When I thought about
the first time somebody trips in your party or gets clumsy, you start going, wait a minute.
Yeah, somebody bumps their head on a
okay, then one of these characters needs to be clumsy. Just like normal clumsy, not super zombie clumsy. Just enough people aren't sure.
He was a zombie. You killed him. He was a zombie, right? Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of The Simpsons. You killed Zombie Flanders. Zombie.
That would definitely bring some of the humor into it for us. Very dark humor, but humor nonetheless.
Yeah.
But you're right. There should be like a clumsy character. Like the Hans character could be that clumsy character, right? Yeah.
Right.
And then it's
the character that makes bad decisions.
Yes, mm-hmm. he makes bad decisions. He does get away.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks he's a zombie because he's so clumsy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. And they're like, oh no, he got turned into a zombie because he went down the mountain. But no, he's just clumsy. And
Yeah.
Ooh, you can make it a double accident. He's just clumsy. The guy has the gun on him, trips, and shoots Hans.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Who later comes back as a zombie.
That would definitely bring some of our humor, and I like it.
We're getting there. You know, you need those intense moments of pathos to really sell the comedy, you know?
Yeah.
We need those moments of relief, because it's going to be tense. We're going to make it very thriller-like, I think.
Yeah, no, yeah. The third act should be longer and more intense with the
sure.
With the battles.
And I guess in the soundtrack we have to have somebody's watching me.
And I have no privacy.
That has a double meaning, because Anne is being watched by them all the time, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think that if we tighten up the opening story, right?
Yeah.
Give our Anne and Sarah characters more importance in the story, right? and those psychic abilities, they also tie in. So we have the sort of double whammy of fire, and her psychic abilities allow her to affect them somehow, lead them into the fire or whatever the case may be, but make it important that she's key to their destruction.
Yeah, we have to have that reverse connection as well, where we get a little bit of what is mode, and that's how we learn maybe a little bit more about these creatures and what they are.
Oh, we can make it so tragic, because they just would be, like you said, they just want to be left alone.
Yeah,
right. Mm. So just make it so sad that they're make it sad, like she feels their pain, that they just want to be left alone, and they'd rather not have to kill all these people.
But yeah, and these connections, like it seems to be in the film, they affect her pretty physically, and it's physically draining. We could actually show more of what a physical effect that is, that connection, you know, her nose starts bleeding and head starts pulsing or whatever, but maybe
we can do a nosebleed.
It's not a Scanner's moment, but
no.
But you know, have some physical effects on her.
Yeah. And have it be physically draining. So at some point they're like, we just have to knock her out because it's too much.
Yeah.
But it can also be, they can also use her to track the monsters. They're like going, okay, like they're detecting methane pockets.
Yeah.
She's their monster detector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they're constantly trying to keep her being drawn in as well.
Mm. Yeah. But yeah, I mean,
they got to check each other as well. Cause I mean, you know, that Brett got drawn to them.
Yeah.
Although they did get awfully close to bring him out of the cabin.
Yes, they did. They'd already come down the mountain at a certain extent. But maybe she says, well, they're coming.
Yeah.
I can feel them coming.
Yeah. Well, she's so psychic. She's the only one who can. It's like having better hearing than anybody else. Yeah. She knows they're there well before anybody else will.
Yeah.
Right. But she doesn't know what they are and doesn't really get that strong connection with them until they're close by. And like, and there's that connection is so strong that she starts, you're right, getting an idea as to who these creatures are, right?
Yeah.
Like what their motivations are, where they're from.
Maybe Sarah doesn't get redeemed. Maybe she winds up constantly trying to get a piece of the action of this town, realizing that there is something going on. And I was like, well, you know, I'll keep quiet. Here's my evidence. I'll keep quiet, Mayor, if you throw me $500,000. That's a good hush money.
She could do that. Or maybe, I don't know, this is just an idea.
I still want her to be a badass. But
yeah, at the end of the movie, they managed to, like, maybe it's not even so much, like, with the methane pockets, the explosion happens. It doesn't kill all of them, but it contains them back in the mountain.
Yeah.
And they can't get out. But maybe Sarah's in there, too.
Yeah, yeah.
She had to be left behind.
You guys are so dark.
I don't know. There's something wrong with me.
I don't know what's up with Jason.
I'm not satisfied with her character because Anne seems to be the one that's going to survive this thing. So, and be the more innocent character still.
Yeah. Yeah. She's being manipulated by her sister to do these things.
Yeah, and she's a victim. Yeah. And I don't see her now. The more I talk about it, the more I don't see Sarah changing.
No. And I don't know. It's kind of, it would be Anne is the one who is the act. But I could see her being lost if her sister's gone, no matter how manipulative she is. Like, that would be the tragedy of it all.
Yeah. But would she, would Anne need her sister anymore if she's hooking up with Philip?
And I think that's what they were hinting at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, except that it was Philip and Sarah at the end of the movie. Because
no, it's Philip and Anne.
Oh, wait, what's the journalist's name? The journalist Philip Truscott, and Alan is the one who was with Sarah.
Yeah, Alan's with Sarah.
Oh, okay.
And they're not really with each other. They're just standing. It's like, oh, I think she's in love with
her. They're hanging out.
Yeah. I'm like, I have a feeling you won't be in a partnership anymore. he's old. I did age my characters a wee bit just to make everything mesh, and I made Alan a bit younger. So
I did some moving around and stuff.
Yeah, I did too. And since we're talking about it, we want to do some casting?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I led last week, and Sam's didn't get to do on the last episode remake. So we'll let Sam lead this one.
Yeah.
Okay. So for my Alan, I went with Liev Schreiber.
Nice.
Cool. Thanks. I like that choice.
Yeah. For my Anne, I went with Alicia Vikander.
Nice.
And I went with Brie Larson as her sister because they look like they could be sisters.
They really do.
That's good.
For my professor, I went with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, nice.
I'd love to see him in a role like that. For my Philip Truscott, I went with James Marsden, because he's kind of got that sort of traditional, handsome look.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the only other one I cast was Brett, because I wanted to cast our big bad zombie, because he does play a key role.
I did that too.
Yeah. And I cast David Boreanaz. I thought he'd look great as that sort of clumsy zombie character, and the sort of professional mountain climber.
Nice. Right.
Played both of those really well. And then for my director, because I always do a director, I did it with Paul Hyatt. He directed a great horror comedy called Howl.
Okay.
So much fun, that one. And he's also, this is one of the other reasons I went with him, is he's also been the makeup artist on literally hundreds of horror films and TV series.
He may really make this eye look good.
He can really make sure that he would. You can tell he wouldn't be satisfied unless it looked great.
Nice.
But yeah, he did the makeup for The Descent.
Oh, and that's great makeup.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, he's a good choice.
Nice. I do have a connection to that movie in mind.
Nice. Yeah, that made me want to change my director. I might have to give it to you.
All right.
But
well, I'll go next and give you a moment to think about that. For my director, I went with John Wright, who did some wonderful horror comedies like Grabbers and Robot Overlords and Tormented. I've liked all of these movies, so like to see him on something like this. I'm not expecting this to have a gigantic budget, so he's worked really well with smaller budgets. For my Alan, I went with Kevin McKidd. He kind of had the look I wanted.
Nice.
Better known as Tommy from Trainspotting, and in another horror comedy I really like called Dog Soldiers.
Yeah, I think he was also on Grey's Anatomy. For other of our listeners.
Yep. For my Philip Truscott, I was thinking more of he could still be my journalist, but I was thinking somebody a little more quirky looking that might mesh with Anne a little bit better, slightly innocent as well. Mm-hmm. So I went with Russell Tovey from Being Human.
Oh, nice.
I love him.
Yeah. If you guys watch that show, he is the werewolf character.
Yeah. Yeah. He's
been great. For my Sarah Pilgrim, I went with Kate Beckinsale.
Nice.
Because I wanted the badass. And I just kept thinking back to our Total Recall episode. So.
Oh, yeah. Super badass.
For her sister, I went with Myanna Buring from as the Anne Pilgrim, and she's from The Descent.
No.
Nice.
And for my Professor Kravitz, I went with Peter Capaldi.
Nice. Nice. That's good. Yeah, like if you've gone with the director of Grabbers, that's what I was going to change it to.
Oh,
I originally had like John Carpenter as an idea because I was like, wait, it seems like the thing. Why not?
Yeah, well, they certainly have those aspects in there as well.
And he knows how to inject humor into it.
Yeah, and he was obviously inspired with The Fog, so.
Exactly. So for my Alan, his last name doesn't have to be Brooks. I just went with Alan, and I put Naveen Andrews in it. Because it seems to me, if you're working for an international agency, Naveen Andrews just seems like the guy who would show up.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. For Philip Truscott, I've got Daniel Ings. He's in Lovesick and a few other British TV shows. And this also tied into my Anne Pilgrim. I chose Antonia Thomas from Lovesick and Misfits.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then for Sarah Pilgrim, I chose Tandy Newton.
Okay.
Because I was doing this whole thing where she's old enough where I have a feeling that maybe she gave birth to Anne and is actually her mom.
Right.
Oh, nice. I like
so
that.
So it goes into the con artist aspect of it all and why she would be so controlling.
Right.
I like that. It adds another level to the whole thing.
Yeah. And especially when the daughters keep calling her Sarah.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
And then for Professor, I went a different way because it was like, I was thinking German. I'm like, who haven't I seen? Well, I put Franca Potente in there. I love her. And I'm like, I could see her being like a professor scientist, but like the outdoorsy type.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. No reason it can't be a woman. So.
Yeah, exactly. And for Brett, I put Tom Storton. He's a British actor, very tall, but like kind of very striking looking. And I could see him being like a great zombie.
Right.
And I think for like another bit, if we combine our professor and our thing, I won't put the other geologist, but I did have Jürgen Prochnow as another geologist at some point.
Okay.
And you just reminded me, I did cast the mayor. I forgot to write it down. I want Jack Black as the mayor.
Nice.
I hate that.
I really hate Jack Black, but
I don't hate Jack Black. We've never met.
Okay. You just hate not movies Jack Black is in.
That's not true. I like School of Rock.
High Fidelity I liked.
Yeah. I like High Fidelity as well.
Yeah. No, but I mean, if you want to inject comedy into it, and I could play. He can play smarmy.
Yeah, I just when I think of that, I don't like with horror comedies. I don't like guys too associated with comedy to be in it because there's a balance that I like to maintain.
Speaking of who probably could sell it, Richard Coyle.
Yeah,
who is in Grabbers? I could see him being a smarmy mayor, but also be quite funny.
Yeah, no, and that's why I went with Jack Black because
Anthony Head.
Yeah. Oh, even better. Oh, yeah, even better.
Exactly.
Yeah, totally.
There we go. But yeah, you need to cast our mayor because I mean he now plays a key role.
Right? Yeah, I didn't. It didn't coalesce when I made my list, but yeah, Anthony Head's my mayor.
Yeah,
I will defer to that.
Will our mayor live? That's my other question. I kind of want him to die, but that's just me.
As far as I'm concerned, the only people who walk out of there are our reporter Stuart
and.
Yeah, if there's
and
a sequel,
the professor.
There's a sequel to this movie.
And the professor.
This has now become a military operation. Nobody lives in this town anymore.
Yeah, it's literally been wiped off the map.
Yeah,
like in the Simpsons movie, where they got rid of it.
Yeah, exactly. The only way to keep these creatures from coming down the mountain is to make sure there's no reason for them to come down the mountain. Yeah.
Like with Google Maps, you can just erase it.
What is that? It is a blur. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's not suspicious at all.
Nope.
Yeah. No, I this whole town pretty much is exterminated by these creatures.
Yeah.
I think. Oh, poor sad creatures. Just want to be left alone. They thought, hey, where can I be alone? A mountain. And then all these people show up.
They're just up in the mountains, sunning themselves.
People ruin everything.
Yeah, no, and Alan, I mean, he can die that heroic death. He can sacrifice himself by being the one who sets off the methane gas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But he's just too close, and it kills him, right?
Yeah. Although, as tragic as this might be, if you need Anne to lure them in, then Anne has to die.
Yeah.
And Sarah's the one that lives.
Yeah.
Which makes it even more tragic.
I don't know. Like, where you make it, like, the connection between Anne and Sarah, they can't discern. So Sarah decides to go in. I don't know. It's hard to say.
All humans look alike?
Yeah, exactly. There are aliens. I would say...
Well, we have one eye. Our depth perception isn't really good.
Yeah. To be fair, if you give me two really different wild rabbits, I'm not going to know the difference between those two different wild rabbits. I'm pretty sure that's how aliens would look at
humans. Connecting to her visually. That's the thing, is they're connecting to her... Sarah, yeah. Right?
True.
Right.
Their giant brains.
But maybe we give Sarah this psychic connection as well. It's not as strong as Anne's.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how she came up with the whole scam thing, is maybe it's hereditary. Maybe it came down from her mother, and they used to run the scam, and now...
She just buries the
ability. she was never as good, so the scam never worked with her mother.
Well, no, it never worked as well with
her mother. Yeah. But her mother was probably as strong as her daughter. Like, it skips a generation type of deal.
Yeah, but so she's got the latent power, and it's... She is like the misdirect. This is her redemption. Is she's like, oh, they don't.
What if she has it and has been suppressing it with like alcohol and stuff?
Ooh,
give her a drinking issue.
I like it.
Oh, she can be just and she can be a great sloppy drunk. Have you watched Westworld?
Yep, a great tragic character. Like just. Oh, and that self hatred,
tragic comic, right? Like that's the best part. Is you can do that whole tragic comic thing with this character,
yeah,
right? Where she's slimy and skeevy, but then she's hilariously fun drunk too.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, and that's how they keep going. Because like, if she was a terrible if she was truly evil and terrible, didn't have that charisma, they wouldn't have gotten as far.
Yeah. Ooh.
Oh yeah.
And then maybe it's a case of, you know, Anne's there to keep her from killing herself.
Yeah. Like
from completely self-destructing. So it doesn't make Anne nearly as manipulated by her sister.
Or her mother. Her mother and sister-mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ew.
Or the belief that, maybe that's sort of at the end. Like the sister-mother's like going, it's a codependent relationship and I have to go. Like one of us has to die.
Yeah.
or this is going to be terrible.
So she still gets redemption, but at the same time, there's that sort of mutual sacrifice of her and Alan.
Yeah. She just uses her ability that she's long suppressed to lure them in.
We got some like rounded mythology here. I like it.
That's right. Everybody's a well-rounded character now.
I love it.
Yeah.
It's going places. Right. Now I just need somebody famous with some money to listen to our podcast and go, you know what? You're right. We should do it exactly like that.
Yes. Yeah. They'd be like, nobody wants a remake of the Trollenberg Terror. Well, we do now.
Yeah.
Because it sounds awesome.
Let's look at it this way. There's a number of times you made remakes nobody wanted to see. So this could be one they might want and they just don't know it yet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, you at home. Did you guys enjoy this episode? Do you like us remaking really quirky movies like this? Do you want to see a remake of the Trollenberg Terror? Do you want a giant eyeball returning to the screen?
Yeah.
You can let us know. You can let us know. Invasion the Remake on Facebook, at Invasion Remake on Twitter, and invasionoftheremake@gmail.com. And of course, if you have suggestions, corrections, comments, we're more than happy to take a look at them, and it could be fodder for a future episode.
Exactly.
We like fodder. Evidenced by the fact that we've killed everybody in this movie.
Oh, yeah. this asks like a great philosophical question that just kind of occurred to me. Are you watching the giant eye in the movie, or is the giant eye in the movie watching you?
Who watches the giant eyeball?
Yeah. They have those TVs that are supposedly recording you while you don't know it.
That could be like good in the theaters. The giant eyeball's like looking at you, put away your phones.
Yeah. I see you texting.
Vibrate is not good enough. Turn it off. It's like the hypno toad, but the eyeball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a hypno toad in the middle of our movie. That's all.
I'm just now thinking of like the merchandising that I can do, t-shirts and toys. And...
Well, as an aside, what I was thinking about this largely through part of the movie made me think of that episode of Futurama where there was the giant brains that came and everybody got really, really dumb except Fry, who was A, already dumb, and B, his brainwaves were different. So he was the only one who could defeat the evil brain monsters.
I would be surprised if this movie had inspired like some cartoons like that as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I mean, there's no question that it's a surprisingly culturally relevant film. I mean, it's one covered by Mystery Science Theater, and I mean, it's ingrained in.
No, in fact, they made it their first movie.
Yes, mm-hmm. And now I do want to watch the pilot so I can see it again and
yeah,
see it with their commentary because and it's so much fun.
I do hear it is returning to Netflix.
Yes, it is.
It has returned actually.
It's back already.
Yeah,
excellent.
Yeah, no, the first they posted it a couple months ago.
Yeah.
Are they putting the back matter up or no?
I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know. I know that the new one with Felicia Day and... Oh, no.
Oh, God. Who else is the other guy?
My favorite. Patton Oswalt.
Thank you.
Love Patton Oswalt.
Nice.
Yeah, because I was trying to remember. I'm like, it was like a famous, famous name and I couldn't remember it.
Cool.
Yeah, as our scientists, so...
Yeah. Might try to watch one tonight.
Well, that's the thing. Like, Mystery Science Theater 3000 is doing something like a lot of people already did. But like in front of other people. And it was such a cultural touchstone for a lot of people who never would have seen a number of movies if it weren't for that TV show.
Sure. Yeah.
Like we probably wouldn't have known some of these movies exist if it weren't for that TV show.
Yeah. This Island Earth.
Yeah.
I was exposed to that one through that show.
Exactly. So yeah, I think everybody wanted this to come back and I'm really happy. It's so good.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's gonna. I haven't had a chance to watch any episodes yet, but I know they're on there. So
excellent.
I'm looking forward to
as
seeing them.
A young adult in the '90s, this is what I yearned for. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny how when you really think about what we do, to a certain extent, we kind of do the reverse of what Mystery Science Theater does. Is they watch a movie and hack on it. We watch a movie and go, "Well, that part was really good. Let's use that."
Yeah.
We are the Canadian version of Mystery Science Theater 2000.
You know what? Nice.
This is a bad movie, but they're really trying. And we like that.
Good effort, people. Good effort.
We're just so nice. We're like, oh, you
I
know.
Didn't realize we were doing that, but yeah, we are very Canadian, aren't we?
Yes, we are, yeah.
Gosh darn it, they're trying.
Yeah, sorry to point that out, but yeah. No, wait a minute, I'm not sorry. Just because I'm Canadian doesn't mean I have to be sorry for pointing something like that out.
No. Here's the most Canadian sentence ever. I'm sorry, I'm Canadian.
Yep, really.
That gets everything out. It's a sentence I have fucking said, and I couldn't stop myself.
I thankfully have never said it.
I don't think I've ever said it either, but...
Well, in the context of it, it's actually pretty funny.
I usually say, just because I'm Canadian doesn't mean I'm nice.
Oh, yeah, no, I said, we have dickheads, too. Do not make that mistake. I can be an asshole. It just takes a lot. But no, the context of that sentence was it was snowing in London and people were talking about getting snowed in and it was like an inch or a half an inch of snow. They're like snowed in and I'm like, I'm sorry, I'm Canadian. I do not understand.
No, snowed in is it went above your door.
You can't find your car. You will try to dig it out if you can find the outline of your car.
If you can still see the shape of your car... It's drivable.
Yeah.
Yep. You're going to work. Your boss will be calling you saying, when are you getting here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Once I make the snow shape more car-like.
Along with another little area to get the car-like shape out onto the area that has been plowed.
Yeah.
Then I will be at work.
It may take you to the end of your shift to get to work, but you're going to get there.
Yeah. I I mean, who here hasn't had that experience where... That 30 to 45 minute drive to work took 3 hours.
Everybody. Yeah.
Speaking of cold.
Yeah, speaking of cold. Okay, yeah.
I still have one. Mm-hmm. Well.
It was all that cold mist from all the evil creatures that got you that cold.
That's right. Gave me a cold and made me all nasally. And
that's how they destroy us.
Yeah. I don't know. How do you like my sick voice?
Does it make him sexy?
Sexy.
Sexy gravelly voice. All right. Well, if you enjoyed the show, leave us a 5-star rating and a review on iTunes. Please do us that solid. It helps other people find the show. And the more people, the better our ratings get. So
yeah.
It's all good. And, you know, I'm not expecting to catch up to Serial anytime soon, but, you know, I wouldn't mind getting top 500.
Oh, for sure. We have dreams, but they're realistic.
Yes. Dreams and aspirations. And, hey, breaking the top 100 would be amazing. But it's top 500 I can live with.
Yeah. Well, but it's baby steps.
Who knows? That's maybe we are. I don't know. I've never looked.
Well, that's the first dream.
I can't scroll that long before getting bored.
And you're going, we're better than them. We're better than them.
Yeah. That's why we're in the search bar, guys. So search us. Leave us those 5-star ratings and reviews and help other people find us without having to scroll a million times. Another way you can do it is tell them about the show and where to find it. We're not just on iTunes. We're hosted by Libsyn and we're on their app as well. We're on Google Play Music, Stitcher, Player FM, TuneIn Radio, Blueberry, YouTube. We're all over the place.
Over the place.
Yeah.
We have invaded. You guys just don't know it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know all the platforms we're on. So you just have to search us out. Hit that subscribe button and you never miss an episode. We're out every week for free.
Yeah.
All this goodness.
Every week.
We've never missed a week yet. Knock on wood.
And we're not going to, because that's why we record double episodes.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah, so we're trying to get ahead of sometimes when we know vacation's coming up. We're hitting the summertime and... You know, I'm going to want to get out the occasional day as well. So
Instead
of sitting and editing like I'm probably going to do right after this.
And it is beautiful outside here today.
It is, yes. So this is what I'm missing for you people.
This is the sacrifices we make, guys.
That's well, right.
The sacrifices Jay makes. I mean, I get to go outside in the sun. I'm going to go home and garden, so.
Well, see, I sometimes have to miss the sun to watch the movies that we're doing.
There, that does happen as well. So, yeah,
I'm gonna
try to crank this out and maybe enjoy the last moments of the sunlight before it goes away.
It is
away.
Up later, so you're
it is.
Good.
Yeah. So I'll still have some sunlight by the time I'm done. But I hope you guys enjoyed the show. That was the Trollenberg Terror, aka the Crawling Eye. I had fun with this one.
Yes,
so did I.
I like these weird 50s sci-fi movies, and. Yeah. As you notice, we've kind of increased the weirdness factor as of late, and I don't know. I'm having a lot more fun because
of it. This is a lot of fun. I love me a tiny set, like a tiny model with tiny models on it. They're just being lit on fire with regular size flames, and you can tell.
I just want some guy off screen to lean in to light a cigarette on the burning model. I'm like, oh, sorry, I was in shot.
I thought you were done, guys. And then there's a new subplot with a giant. That's how they'd work with that.
Where he got the giant rolling paper, I don't know.
Because they can't afford to remake it. So they're just like going, okay, giant who smokes.
That's such an Edwin thing to do.
Very much an Edwin thing to do.
Yeah.
Oops, I'll just write that in.
Yeah, and if you like that idea, go listen to our Plan 9 episode.
Yeah. Very interesting. A movie I never thought would be remade, but there they were.
Yep, there they are. Well, that's it. I'm going to go blow my nose and hope I can breathe for more than 5 minutes at a time. I have been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
And I, as far as I know, will continue to be Trish.
Okay. Continue being Trish. We're out of here.
Bye, everybody.
It
idiot. We nearly had him. Why did you let him go?
Didn't you see
him? What are you talking about?
His head. It was torn off.